Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on when you're listening to this, and welcome back to the Essential Mooting Guide, the podcast, as brought to you by the Moot Court Society at the Faculty of Law of Universitas Padjadjaran. On today's episode, we're continuing our three-part series to teach you some practical skills you can use in preparation to join a moot, as a newbie mootie, or even if you're just trying to be a better law student. On today's episode, we're going to be looking at legal writing, specifically writing a legal memorandum, a skill very important and very essential, fundamental even, to moot court and people who do it. And as always, today we have two special guests to help us teach you about it, the first of which is already with us. Hello, Regine. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Travis?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking. So, Regine Wiranata from Universitas Airlangga, batch 2016. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And since then, you've gone on to graduate, of course, cum laude, and apparently that is only the beginning of your very prestigious CV. If I am not mistaken, I could technically say that you've done 6 moot courts between the time you started law school.
Come on, it's 5, Travis.
I would say 6. You started in...
Don't inflate my numbers like that.
Well, let's let the audience decide. How about that? So, I'm just going to go through this in one go, and you can correct me if I get it wrong.
Okay.
So, Regine started her moot career in 2017 at Jessup as an observer, in which her team won the Best Memorandum Award.
That is correct.
This was quickly followed up by the International Maritime Law Arbitration Moot in the same year, where her team won Best Newcomer Team.
Yes.
Because that was Universitas Airlangga's first year participating in that moot, right?
Yes.
And then in 2018 was Regine's first Jessup as a team member.
Yes.
Where her team won runner-up, so second place, in the national rounds.
Yay! First time in our university's history.
And Regine herself won top 50 oralists in the international rounds. This is far from the end of her career, however, because the next year, or not even in the next year, in Imlam, once again, in 2018, she went on to win the second best memo award at the international rounds for Imlam, before going on again to participate in Jessup once more in 2019, in which she won the third Best Memo Award at the national rounds and ranked a very good ranking once more at the international rounds as an oralist. Is that correct so far, Regine?
Now that you've read it out loud to me, I do realize that I spent a lot of my life just mooting, and I'm just having like a sort of crisis at the moment.
Which makes you perfect to be teaching us right now. But obviously, Imlam 2019, you won the best award of all, which was our friendship, of course, Regine. Do you remember?
It's more of a curse.
You remember, really. How did we meet?
Oh, Travis, you flatter yourself far too much.
Do you remember? I would say that we're rather good friends, and I think the listeners can tell.
Are we?
They can obviously tell from the dynamic. So please enlighten us. How did we come to meet each other?
I think you approached me and then said something pretentious during like the opening ceremony or something like that. I remember being very intimidated by you, like, and just going, who the hell is this guy, and why is he talking to me?
Great, now I gotta cut this part out. So I met Regine during Regine's last meet, which was Imlam 2019 last year. Since then, we've just kind of continued to hang out and network and talk about moots, especially since we both coach now, right, Regine?
Right.
So I guess we should immediately jump into talking about legal writing and especially talk about legal memorandums in moot courts.
Ooh.
So let's start with, could you tell us what legal writing is exactly, specifically, I guess, with legal memorandums and how they are in moot courts?
Maybe just to describe it generally, basically it's just another form of writing, but it is different in that you focus on a very specific subject matter. the law, obviously. but more specifically than that, it focuses on like legal facts or hypothetical facts and the rules that apply to them. And then more specifically, when you go to memoranda, it's sort of the argumentative version of legal writing, where you try to synthesize a set of facts and law to somehow favor your client or whoever it is that you're representing. And this applies to both private and public goods.
So that implies that a legal memoranda would be different from other legal writing, right? Could you maybe tell us a little bit more about that?
Maybe just what I mean by legal writing generally is things like articles, journals, stuff like that.
And how would a legal memoranda differ from those, like an article, a legal article or a legal journal? How would a legal memoranda be different from those?
I think the purpose of the two different types of legal writing is what makes them different. Because if you look at journals and articles, what they mostly do is try and explain how a certain rule works generally. So it's usually more of a guide for people to understand how the law operates within certain circumstances. And on the other hand, if you look at memoranda, their main purpose is to convince a court of law or an arbitral tribunal that the set of facts that are presented within a moot problem should be interpreted in a way that is favorable to your client, and that they're either not liable for the wrongful acts that are attributed to them, or that, you know, their claim against the other party should win is basically what it is. And so whereas the first one is more descriptive, the second one is more argumentative. And I think that that's a critical difference that determines the tone and the direction of legal memoranda as opposed to other types of legal writing.
I think it's a good sum up. And if I can summarize that before we move on, legal writing obviously is different from other writing because it is focused on legal issues, whether they be descriptive or argumentative, and memoranda falls under the latter.
Yes.
Could you maybe start with pointing us in the right direction of how to write a good legal memoranda? What needs to be included in it? How should the structure be? Could you describe those for us?
I think, well, that's a very broad question, first of all. Generally, I first sort of look at the moot problem, obviously, and try to sort the legal and the factual issues that need to be discussed. That's made clear, of course, by the last part of most moot problems, where they list out the claims of the parties. And then, of course, we move on to writing. The structure that you keep hearing about, I think, I'm pretty sure your seniors will mention this, is IREC, which is issue, regulation, or rule, application, and conclusion. So basically, issue identifies the problem that you need to discuss within that particular claim. And then you move on to rule, which is the applicable legal regime, I suppose is a fancy word for that, or the applicable field of law for whatever issue is. Yes, the law. And then you move on to application, which is when you start integrating the issue and the rule, and you try to say why a rule should work a certain way that you say it does and how it applies to your case. And finally, you move on to conclusion, which is the conclusion.
So wrapping it up in I think
it's wrapping up pretty straightforward. Like, but just as a note, maybe I don't generally follow this rule just because I think writing memos require a lot of flexibility. Sometimes I'll put regulation first, or I'll move issue back, or like that sort of thing happens, doesn't it, Travis? Like
if
you keep following IRAC, then it'll read a bit rigidly. Yeah, it is a good guide.
It's a starting point.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good place to start.
I think IRAC is a checklist.
Agreed. That it is a... All of these elements need to be present, but in the ways they interact, you can be a little bit more flexible. But I always tell my kids to start with IRAC and then kind of rewrite their way forward.
That is correct.
Let's move on to our next question, which is really in relation to beginners. What are mistakes that you feel that new kids make? you have coached, you were coaching this year's Jessup, in fact, and I know for a fact that your kids won first place in the national rounds this year. So tell us, what do you observe in newbie mooties, that mistakes that commonly reoccur?
Well, there are several. Maybe the first and foremost issue is they don't understand fully what legal research is. I think it's a different sort of research from what we're used to doing in high school, isn't it, Trav? Because we, in high school, you know, when you had to do papers on English class or whatever, then you'd look to secondary sources or stuff like that and try to synthesize what someone else said about a certain topic. And I feel like what most newbie mooties think they should do with arguments is simply cite what someone else said. So they resort to like highly qualified publicists a lot. I hear highly qualified publicists more than I should when, you know, judges are trying to find an answer on source. And that's not what you should be doing. Instead, what you should be doing is trying to explore how a rule works. And you do that by not just looking at what someone else said in a journal or something like that, but exploring judgments, exploring the applications of that rule.
So really, if I can say that in other words, you're looking to have kids understand why a rule is formed and how it works and argue that something works in the way that you're saying it is rather than another way around.
Yes, that pretty much sums it up.
But obviously this is no longer an issue that you struggle with. What do you think is a prevailing obstacle for you, at least? Is there anything you struggle with up until now?
I do actually still think that's something I still struggle with. Just because some legal issues are very complex and their application is never as easy as you think. So sometimes you know, I still fall into the trap of misinterpreting case laws and not fully understanding what it says, and then only to find out by reading another judgment that, oh crap, I got it wrong. So yeah, that's still something I do struggle with. Not as much as I used to, but just I think people should be reassured. You know, the fact that moots exist and that very intelligent people are writing your problems means that you're going to struggle to some extent, and that should not discourage you no matter how many times you've mooted. But maybe to go into like another issue that I struggle with maybe more than that, maybe that would be structure still. Structure is a very tricky creature, just because what makes sense to you might not make sense to someone else. And my tip for people who are just starting moots, in terms of structure, it would be just to write and rewrite and try to make it clearer than what it used to be. Because there's always a way to make your draft clearer than whatever you have in front of you. And try to get feedback from others as well. And this also, actually, this applies for everything, don't you think, Travis?
I agree.
Like getting feedback from others, yeah, it's useful for substance, it's useful for structure, and it's useful for, you know, pleadings, etc.
So far, we have your explanation about the structure and how it needs to be flexible. We also have your explanation about how you should be looking for how the law works and how it applies in reality rather than just citing what other people say, as well as you've told us to look for feedback on your writing and whether other people can read it well or not. If you ask me, however, there's probably one more point that I would add, and that's, I think, the orientation that you should have depending on your moot. And I think you mentioned this a little bit earlier regarding the difference in orientation you might have with a public moot and a private moot. Could you maybe introduce us to that a little bit? I mean, obviously I might have some points on that, but I've only done 2 moot courts and you've done 5 or 6 depending on the way you look at it. So why don't you take us into the differences in orientation?
I wouldn't say they differ too much. I think, and with public moot, since Travis, you've also done both public and private, I think like sort of the shock that comes with entering private moots stems from the fact that public moots are very philosophical and normative. And because these are, you know, big institutions that you're dealing with. You're dealing with countries, governments. And so the way the rule forms generally tends to require a lot more formalities than, you know, how it works in the private sector. So then it is sort of, I would like to say archaic, but that's not exactly correct. It's sort of more of a formal, esteemed institution, public law is. And so that sort of translates into the types of arguments that you would make. So the arguments that you would make would probably go more into it goes into the arguments that you make. They would have a tendency to be more philosophical, to require more extensive background checks, as in looking at a lot of documents, a lot of preparatory documents, a lot of subsequent conventions and stuff like that. So you would have to justify why a rule works in the way that you say it does, a lot more based on, you know, principles that exist within the system of international law. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot more formal. The way that you structure it also kind of reflects that, and it might be a bit more lengthy. You might have to sprinkle in a little bit of flowery stuff. I think it's two very different. They're two very different creatures when it comes down to, you know, the minutiae of writing stuff.
I'm inclined to agree, and if I can kind of once again summarize that, when you're arguing in a private mood, the orientation to have is more business and commercial in being practical. Would it make sense for a business to do this? Would it make sense for the two parties involved to apply the law in this way? While in a public mood, the orientation is more reliant on the principles and the way they have applied in international law and the regime of international law as a whole between states.
Yeah.
So while one is kind of oriented towards, would this make sense for businesses? While the other one we need to look at the big rules.
Yeah, that is correct.
You think that's a good summary of what?
Yeah, if there's like a better, like a more concise way of. Putting it, I know I went into a bit of a tangent, but it's private moots are practical and public moots are very formalistic.
What do you think is something important to keep in mind? Or maybe, in other words, if you had to give a novice legal writer or a novice legal memorandum writer only one piece of advice, what do you think you would say?
Look at previous memoranda. That's probably the best thing that a newbie mooter could do.
I actually very much agree with you.
Yeah, because I, like my first year in IMLAM, I was the only sort of person who was semi-experienced in participating in an official moot by my university. So then I had to, in my first year, I had to face the shock of, you know, being the main writer. And what really did help me was just trying to look at the flow of arguments and the way that previous best memoranda sort of won their case before the judges. The advice that we give you, I think, in this podcast are very general, because not all moots fall into the sort of private public dichotomy that we classified them into, don't you think, Travis? Like, some of them are sort of in between, some of them have a, like, the judges have a different preference.
I suppose.
You need to learn your audience, and you do that by looking at what memos have, you know, won the accolades in that particular moot.
I think so, and I think it really puts into picture what a specific moot court competition is looking for in their writing.
Yeah.
In the memos that they award best. And like Regine said before, it's very important to make your memo understandable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you read best memos, they give you a really good example of how to say things in an understandable manner.
Yes, that is correct.
And when you read those, hopefully, at least, you start to catch on how to make your writing understandable as well. Well, we are approaching our time for this current interview.
No.
Maybe we can have you in the future. I'm not sure. But as always, we always allow our guests to say one thing to all of the newbie Mooties, or all the Mooties in general, or anyone listening, really. If you have one piece of advice you want to give the listeners from your very colorful life, some advice. It doesn't have to be about legal writing. It can be about anything. The floor is now yours, Miss Regine Wiranata.
Well, my biggest advice to kids and whoever really is, maybe, I know this sounds cliche, but don't discredit yourself too much. You know, try believing in yourself a little bit more, because believing in yourself leads you to allow yourself to do things that you otherwise would not. Like, for example, joining a moot. I feel like a lot of people don't have the confidence to go into moots because they think that everyone's so smart, and that is correct. But, you know, like, it's an opportunity for you to grow and learn.
You can be smart too.
You can be smart too. That is correct. It's absolutely correct. So yeah, just believe in yourself. You can do it. I believe in you.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you for believing in us. And thank you as well for taking the time to podcast with me today, Regine.
Yes, you're very welcome. It was very nice talking to you again, Travis.
I'm sure we'll be talking again very soon as well. But for now, for our listeners, we're going to go to a break. But stay tuned, because after this, we're going to be talking with a very special someone from back home at our very university, Universitas Padjadjaran. But again, thank you, Regine.
Thank you for having me.
And goodbye.
Goodbye.
Stay safe.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we are back with the Essential Mooting Guide, the podcast, with me, Travis Wallio. And now I am with Yogi Bratajaya as our second guest for today to teach us a little bit about legal writing. Hello, Yogi. How are you doing?
I am doing fine.
So Yogi Bratajaya, currently a law student at Universitas Padjadjaran in my faculty, one of our very own. Hopefully not for long though, yeah, Yogi?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yogi Bratajaya is from batch 2016, the year before me. In fact, he is the former chief coordinator for International Moot Court at our organization, my predecessor. Not only that, Yogi Bratajaya was also the head delegate for our Jessup team this year, the team that won runner-up at the national rounds for the first time in UNPAD's rememberable history, as well as the 7th best memo in the world. Did I get all of that right, Yogi?
Yes, you did. Thank you for the introduction.
Yogi, similarly to Regine, is a very weathered mootie. Two times IMLAM and two times Jessup. And with a achievement like that, I don't think anyone's going to argue as to your qualification to speak today, Yog. Shall we get right into it?
Yes.
So I kind of want to have the discussion a little bit different with what I had with Regine. So why don't we start with you telling us what makes a good legal memorandum to you?
In my opinion, what makes a good legal memorandum is a memorandum that gets to the point. A memorandum that doesn't beat around the bush too much and clearly sets out the arguments that it's trying to make and the objectives that those arguments are trying to reach. So, in my opinion, a good and an excellent legal memorandum is well structured. And yeah, just get straight to the point.
That was a similar theme that we talked about with Regine earlier, actually. So I think that's a good way of putting it. You've been coaching for a while as well. And obviously as chief coordinator, you had to oversee all the teams as I am doing now. In fact, you used to coach me on one or two occasions. That being said, obviously you've looked at a lot of beginners. Do you feel like there are any patterns that you see especially in terms of mistakes that a beginner might make?
From my time coaching, from my experience as a beginner, and sometimes what I still do, it's the exact opposite of what I think makes a good memorandum, that they don't get straight to the point. So the thing is, with some beginners, and even I do it still sometimes, is that you read so much and you research so much on the law that you want to dump all of it into the memorandum and into the paragraphs and arguments. When you're not careful with it, then the memorandum just loses traction. You lose steam of the point and the argument that you're trying to make from your submission and from you trying to detail and bring all these case laws and arguments and opinions from experts and maybe state delegates, that the point gets lost in all the explanation. The most prominent example that I always provide when I'm coaching is my experience when I first started mooting. So this was the International Maritime Law Arbitration moot, and with IMLAM, the bread and butter of English law is case law. And what I did as a beginner is that I opened a judgment, I went straight to the end towards the judgment, and I copy-pasted that judgment, and I felt that, oh, I understand this judgment, I understand this case, let me insert it into my legal memorandum. When that is absolutely not the case. With any case law and judgments that you read, there's always intricacies of facts, intricacies of the law. So you really have to understand the not only the essence of that case, but also the background of the case and the reasons why the judges in that case decided that way.
Well, if I can kind of summarize that, and in fact, that's kind of consistent with what I had discussed with Regine earlier, the two points that you mentioned are that first, a lot of beginners fail to be straightforward enough that they can capitalize on the traction that a reader might have with a way a memo might be written. So essentially, they're not being straightforward enough. As well as when they're researching, in the second point, when they're researching, they aren't really understanding why a certain rule is being applied in a certain way. They're in exactly. Some cases, skipping to the end and taking the shortcuts, and that fails to give them the real understanding that they need to write properly. I think that is a point we missed earlier, though, that you can't take shortcuts with some readings. I mean, obviously, sometimes you want to be more efficient, and I understand that. And sometimes you can get that from case briefs or commercial briefs when we're talking about private, or not private, when we're talking about common law. But when you have the time, it really does help to really just read the judgment. And I think that is a good healthy tip to give beginners.
It's daunting, I know. Like, judgments can reach up to 100 to 150 words. And especially, this is my opinion about English judges, the English that they use is sometimes very confusing, but there's really no other way around it, in my opinion. You really do have to read the full judgments and to understand why the judges decided that way, not only the decision.
Regine gave us the last piece of advice, and I think it's very relevant here, that in a lot of cases, you just have to believe in yourself. And I think when you're reading judgments, especially English common law judgments, I think that's a very important thing to keep in mind, that you can learn to understand these judgments. I see it every year. IMLAM every year, the students who have no background or no business whatsoever reading common law English judgments learn, and after a while they really pick up, and they can read the cases a lot faster than even I did when I was doing mooting. But I think we're getting off on a little bit of a tangent. I kind of wanted to dial back and go back to your history in mooting. So you started mooting, what was it, first year, 2016?
First year, yes.
So with IMLAM.
The end of 2016, I became a delegate.
Now, I'm not sure if this is necessarily true, but I feel that generally, and this is as it should be, you have improved in terms of both Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, in terms of achievement, you have improved over the years and kind of cultivated
this year.
What do you think is something that you did different to help you improve every year? What is something that you wish you had known during your first year when you were writing all these legal memoranda?
I'm going to get very technical here, and it's footnotes. My habit, and to your question, this is what I still struggle with, is you read, and then once you feel like you've read enough, you start writing. And once you get writing, it's very hard to get off writing. Like, once you start a sentence to a paragraph, it's very hard to stop finishing that paragraph. But then when you finish that paragraph, and when it's time to insert footnotes, then in my opinion, that's like the hardest, most tedious task that you can do. Of, you know, trying to find your documents again, trying to find the sentences and the paragraphs that you used within your legal memorandum, and then trying to format those footnotes within the legal memorandum. In my opinion, if you hold it off until the very end when you're finalizing and when you're about to submit a draft, that can get very stressful and very messy.
In a way, you're kind of doing the work two times. You're doing twice as much work
exactly,
if you do it that way,
yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I have to be honest, out of all of the advice that we've had on this podcast, I think that is easily top three of the things I relate to the most. Because I would always do that when I was memorizing. And you're right. And I think it's a very good advice in general as a law student. It's just to keep good notes.
Definitely.
And it's just best practices, I think. I think another thing that we try to teach our kids to do, but obviously with case in point, the two of us, we sometimes still fail to do, is teaching our kids to keep notes of all the reading they do. I guess we call it kunqian or keynotes. And you kind of sort all the reading you do. So when you have to kind of go back and look for those documents, you kind of have a map in a simpler document that kind of takes you to these topics that you wrote in the sentence. But even so, I think your advice is still best. When you're done, when you're still fresh after reading, you should make your footnotes. And
I think not only with the legal memorandum, but organize your files, guys. It's this one piece of advice, one of the most memorable pieces of advice that I received was when I attended the Jessup workshop. And the speaker was Kak Shianti from Universitas Pelita Harapan. And her methodology for legal research and legal writing is, in my opinion, the best. And I still can't do what she does because I am that disorganized. But what she does is, before even starting to research, when reading the problem or the compromis, she lists keywords so that when she starts a practice session, she knows exactly what she's trying to find. And once she finds something, she lists that legal basis right under that topic, that keyword that she has placed in a separate document. And through that way, she is able to, you know, again, when asked by teammates or by formers, what is the legal basis of this? She just has it all there in one document. And in my opinion, that is one of the best pieces of advice that I have received. And it has made my legal research and my legal writing that much more efficient and that much more effective.
I think this is actually, we've already started to talk about the next point that I meant to talk about, which is tips on legal writing. And so to kind of wrap up the section on the tips, I think there are three or four points that we've just covered just now. The first one is obviously to do your footnotes, every sentence or at maximum, after every paragraph you write, do your footnotes.
Yeah, do your footnotes.
And second is to keep keynotes of all the documents you read, a sort of map. And the third one, in relation to that second one, is to use keywords. So when you read something that falls under a certain keyword, you can put that into your notes, and then you can essentially have a map to all the documents that you've read, and that will help you with step one, which is to, say it with me, guys, do your footnotes.
Do your footnotes.
And then lastly, most importantly, but definitely not of lesser importance, is to organize your files. And I think, I don't know if you relate to this, Yook, but I remember my first move during Asia Cup. To this day, I look at the files because I still have the files, and I use it to share certain journals or books with my juniors. And I look at the files that I have in the folder written Asia Cup 2018, and I honestly don't understand how I got any work done with the state of my files in that folder.
That's what I did in my early mooting days as well. And then when you save the file as well, you don't rename the file. And it's just like the name of the author or a bunch of letters and numbers. Right? And then when someone asks you like, oh, where is this found? And you're trying to find that judgment. It's like, oh no.
Where did it go?
What is the title of this document? Yes, where did it go? It's just a bunch of letters and numbers.
Well, I think this is actually concrete advice that I did not have in mind to share actually today. And I'm very glad that we got to cover it and you got to share it with us. I do kind of want to talk about one last point before we kind of wrap this up. I spoke with Regina earlier a little bit about the contrast between the orientation that you need to have when you're writing arguments in public moots versus private moot. And we both did private and public moots, and you have as well. You're kind of one of the hybrid mooties, shall we say. Do you have anything you want to say on the contrast between the two? If I can kind of share what we said before, I don't know if you're going to add anything on this, but we basically said, in a nutshell, it's private. We focus more on business practicality, and that's very much something you have to consider when writing your arguments, while in public moots, the word Regin used was normative, and we rely more on the rules that exist within the regime of international law and these big principles, and those are the things you should keep more in mind when you're writing in a public moot. Do you agree with this, or do you have anything you want to add on this, or perhaps anything you don't agree with?
Yeah, I agree to an extent. Because in my opinion, in both public and private moots, when drafting and constructing your arguments, you really do have to take into account the logic of the argument. So what this means is that within private moots, yes, there is a very heavy emphasis on business practicability. Would this make sense? Would this be conscionable to a prudent business person? And for public international law moots, yes, it is more on the normative sides, but still, you really do have to take into account, does this legal argument follow logic? Does this argument make sense, taking away the legal basis? And yeah, taking away the legal basis, does this argument flow so that it makes sense logically, so that point A to point B, it doesn't take the term, what's the term? It doesn't take mental leaps. You know, you don't have to do mental gymnastics to get from point A to point B. So I think I agree to an extent upon the emphasis, but I do still is in the opinion that even for public international law moots, those arguments do need to make sense logically.
So what you have to add on that is that essentially, regardless of what moot you're doing, public or private, even when you are being normative, for example, in a public international moot, you still have to make sure it all makes sense. There are no logic leaps, exactly. There are no mental gymnastics. Make it something that someone would go, that's a good point. Something like that, right?
The pivotal piece of advice would be make it make sense to someone who doesn't understand a thing about the law or about the facts of the case. Because most of the time, judges are exactly that. Not all of them, they do have some expertise, but they don't go as in-depth as you are going when you're trying to construct your arguments and when you're reading up on the legal basis, on the case law or on the elements to establish a customary international law. So when you're rereading your legal memorandum, when you're rereading your argument, and when you're finalizing, put yourself in the mindset of, I am a person that has no background in international law or private international law at all. If I am that person, when I read this argument, when I read this legal memorandum, does it make sense?
I think that's great advice and something that everyone should keep in mind when they're writing a legal memorandum, making sure that anyone can understand what you're writing. And I think that's great advice. But unfortunately, while we would love to continue to hear this great advice that you're giving us, it seems we are running out of time. However, as always, we do love to give our guests the opportunity to say one last thing, whatever it is they would like to add. For our dear listeners, do you have anything you want to add before we end the show today?
One last tip for legal writing. You have to love to read. You really can't be lazy about reading. You have to love, and you don't have to necessarily love it, but you at least have to have a degree of passion towards the topics that you are researching. And I think without that, and without that initial bit of motivation, you're just reading up legal basis without you know, any applicability. So really learn to love the mooting process.
That's fantastic. And I'm sure that's going to be a challenge for some of you mooties. But in my experience, and I think in Yogi's as well, it is definitely something that you can learn to do.
Oh, it's definitely worth it too,
Well, that pretty much wraps up our discussion on legal writing today. And just big thank you to you, Yogi, for taking the time to share your experience and your advice with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
To all of you listeners, we're going to cut to the ending bit right now. But once again, massive thank you to Yogi. And do please stay safe. And I hope to speak with you again very soon. Goodbye, Yogi.
Goodbye.
And thus we come to the end of this episode and the end of our mini-series on practical skills in moot court. In this episode, we discussed a lot about legal writing, especially in terms of legal memoranda, such as the list of components a memoranda should have, that is, issue, rule, application, and conclusion, as well as several beginner mistakes that you can avoid now, such as focusing too much on quoting the law, instead of digesting, understanding it, and applying it accordingly through writing. Stick around till next week, where we'll be hosting a mini-episode with Clara Jalita, the Secretary General of the new Association of Transnational Business Law Students at Universitas Pajajaran, as well as my former teammate at IMLAM last year. Make sure you follow the podcast on Spotify or wherever you're listening so you know when that new episode comes out. Until then, see you later, and may it please the court.